Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sway. We are a blog pump. So on the podcast, and what we are doing is providing insights and experience, and we follow up the news and we bring it to you from our three different perspectives. I'm Heather Stark, and I tend to look at things academically a little bit. I'm working on a PhD in psychology, and we are particularly looking at domestic violence issues, or at least in light of domestic violence issues. Next up is Deborah, and Deborah, you want to introduce yourself?
I'd love to, Heather. Hello. I'm excited to be here today on this wonderful Saturday. My history and experience includes academic as well, Heather, but right now I'm focused on more of the global aspects and the human rights aspects of our daily life going on around us, and I try to apply those lenses to anything that we're going to be talking about. But I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and I have worked the past 20 years in anti-violence against women work.
Wonderful.
Glad to be here.
Good. Glad to have you, too. Pinkley, you're next.
Well, thanks, Heather and Deborah. It's great to hear your wonderful introductions. Pinkley is my nickname. I'm Connie Sue, and people call me Pinkley because I wear pink all the time, and it's become my signature survivorship as a survivor of domestic violence. And I've been working in the field for the last 15 years and have my Bachelor of Arts degree from the Evergreen State College here in Washington State, and it's great to be here.
Well, we're happy that you can join us, and we hope you call in. The call-in number is 646-378-0430. We want to hear from you. Our topic this week is the causes of domestic violence, and they are quite varied. Pinkley, you have any comment about those causes and what people think caused domestic violence?
Oh, Heather, I think that a lot of people have an idea that they're because their people get angry,
mm-hmm.
and it's a root of, oh, there's alcohol or drugs or perhaps mental health or that somebody lost control, and basically that's really what it is about the loss of control, but it's actually the need to have control over another person. What do you think, Deb?
Oh, I agree with you. There's a lot of misconceptions in the general public, and even after doing this work for almost 20 years, whenever I'm approached on the topic, people are always like, well, it just doesn't really happen that much. You know, I don't know what the big deal is. And isn't it a shame that they just can't get along?
Deborah, the newspaper articles is what just startles me to pieces, because whenever an incident where a husband kills or his family or his wife, and they always say somewhere in the article that he was such a lovely man, he just lost it. And
right.
That always bothers me, because I don't think you just lose it and end up killing people or hitting people. What do you think, Deborah?
I think that I would agree with your opinion on this, and I think that there are so many other ways to look at what causes domestic violence, and I am particularly interested in the fact that there is a huge context around domestic violence, and that context is invisible to the family member or the community member. And I think that's why there's so many, you know, conflicting theories about why there is domestic violence. But I really like what you said, Pinkley, when you said it's about power and control over another person. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, that's a pretty deep topic. And I think that I truly believe that that is the root cause, and I would say a lot of the professionals, and I think that we could all agree that that is definitely the core of the issue, is the loss of someone else's control over their own ability to know their self-worth, their self-esteem, and so therefore it needs to be expounded on someone else. Therefore, I need to have control over you because I don't have control over my own sense of self. And I think most of us would agree that it is not about anger, and it just infuriates me when I hear people talk about, oh, well, anger management, oh, the person was drinking, again, all of the other excuses that come with that. Now, those all could be contributing factors, but we're talking about really the core issue here of needing to have control over another human being. And you had mentioned earlier about human rights.
Yes,
and I think it would be really great to touch on the human rights component of this and not think of this as, it's generally male upon female, but we're really talking about a human right issue here. And if Heather and Deb can talk a little bit more about that, I think that would really give a good grounding or context of what we're referring to.
Right.
Well, what we were talking about just before the show, and we hope that you will check this out on our website, but we have found a table of factors from UNICEF, put together by UNICEF, and it basically breaks down the reasons for domestic violence into four areas: cultural, economic, we could say legal or social, and political. And there's a whole slew of reasons under there, including sometimes how we look at marriage and relationships as a society. Deborah?
Yes, and I think that it's easier for me when I look at it as in the human rights context, because right now in general the public says this is something that's between one person and another person. And my thoughts is that it ultimately is between one person towards another person, but there's this bigger overarching theme of the fact that it's not I say something negative to my partner then hits me. And that's not exactly what it's about. It's about a loss of the basic human rights to have a voice, to make your own decisions, to feel safe in your own home, and to have the right to, you know, study or identify in any kind of religious or cultural way without interference from someone who claims to love you. So I really like that human rights framework about the cultural, social, political, economic ways to look at basic rights for a human being. And when I apply that to being a survivor of domestic violence, it helps me feel less a victim.
Yes, I think that's true. One of the things that really bothers me is when people do insist that this is just an isolated thing, it doesn't happen very often, and if it does happen, it's between the man and the woman, and that everybody else should just keep their noses out of it and just step back. But in fact, it's pervasive, and it's built upon certain assumptions that we make in our culture and in our society. We've had a millennia of male control over political systems and over their households and over the economic systems. So here we have thousands of years of living in a culture where men have control, and now we're saying, well, it shouldn't be just men who have control. It should be women and men, and we've been saying that for the last 100 years. Well, 100 years in light of millions of years, or thousands of years anyway, of male dominance, that's just not, it's not easily changing people's views. Do you think, Pinkley?
Yes, I agree, and I think you couldn't have said that better, actually, Heather. And it's all person. It's not, I think it even goes beyond male and female. It just, it's all persons and all relationships and how we treat each other with equal respect and dignity, and that we all have the ability to make our own choices. And when you're working with a partner in a relationship, it's about the equality of that, and not I have power over you, therefore if you don't do this, this, or this, then I'm going to do this, this, and this. It's a idea of equality, and it should be in that respect to all of our relationships.
Exactly. Well,
I was wondering if we wanted to talk about, you know, as a cause of domestic violence. I believe it really started with the legal representation, because we, as you said, Heather, we have a long history of men having higher status legally over women and children, and that women and children were thought of as a piece of property for which the man had responsibility and control and ownership and rights to treat them however they felt necessary. And that's really grounded in basic law back in England, where, you know, supposedly most of us came from in the United States, which is not true. But anyway, they practiced that English law, you know, it's called Black's Law. And so there was a practice, remember, as a women's studies scholar or student, I learned that in the 1800s in the United States that there was some law on the books that says a man can discipline his wife as long as the weapon is no thicker than his thumb, and they called that the rule of thumb. Do you have any comments on that, Heather?
Oh, yes, I do. Well, I think that your point about how women were and children were perceived as property segued into, if something was done to the property, then the owner got compensation. So laws did develop in the 18th and 19th century in this country and other countries where if somebody harmed the woman, okay, then that somebody had to go to court and answer to the owner, the man, the husband.
Right.
So we have that history as well where we're saying, okay, well, this might not be right to hurt this person, and if you hurt this person, then you have to pay compensation to the owner. And I had a really hard time understanding that until somebody explained to me, well, we're sitting here at a table, right? If somebody came over, Deborah, if you came over and you broke my table, you wouldn't try to compensate the table. You'd compensate me.
Right.
Right? And that's how the status of women and children were, you know, back in the day. And we think we've come very, very far in the 20th century with and 21st century. But, you know, I still see this. I see it as a subtle discrimination, if you will, against women and women's rights. Pinkley, have you had any experience with women who are experiencing some legal discrimination regarding domestic violence?
Oh, Heather, I see that all the time in the work that I do. And just in the 15 years that I've been doing this work, and I think most of it, I wouldn't say all of it, but most of it is around children and the idea of a father has rights too, even though the father may be abusive.
Yeah.
And you have to prove that. You know, a woman has to prove why she is trying to protect her children. And I understand that that there are rights for fathers, but only in the context of if you're not abusing or hurting your children.
But the courts tend to give legitimacy to that, that even if the man, the husband, is abusing the woman, first of all, that doesn't mean he's going to abuse the children. It doesn't mean that the children are going to be harmed. And also that a man has a right to his children. And I don't understand that, because I don't think anybody has a right to their children if they're hurting them.
Exactly. Heather, I agree with that 100%, that the crime of violence against your child or your spouse is a crime and should be enough, have enough weight to say that the other parent has a right to protect their child. But, you know, because it started as a legal premise, but then our legal and our legal system and our laws also inform our cultural and our social practices. So now it's not only a legal standard, but it's also a cultural standard. And it is a social practice that in our world there must be a marriage to have children, and usually it's a man and a woman. And, you know, that's kind of a requirement by all these legal, cultural, and social standards that set up a false, kind of a false truth, because it's our culture that keeps us involved, I believe, in relationships that are not healthy or successful or safe. And then when we look at the legal standard, our culture and social commitments to those legal standards, it impacts someone's economic ability. So in the long run, I believe on top of the legal, culture, and social, and it is the economic that plays the most significant role in keeping people in abusive relationships. How do you feel about that, Pinkley?
Wow. Economic is definitely one of the leading factors, that's for sure.
Pinkley has another call. If I can jump in here, Deborah, I think that the that whole history of male dominance, and we're talking about the definition of marriage and definition of ownership of children, if you will, that's not just our culture, is it? I mean, that's a whole slew of cultures around the world.
Absolutely. It's multiple cultures, and it is a global aspect. And, you know, sometimes it's a little more embedded in different countries and cultures than it is in others. So where, you know, here in the United States, I feel like it's a pretty sad state of affairs the way we still have domestic violence after the second wave of feminism and our anti-rape and our anti-battered women's movement. This was 40 and 50 years of organizing against this type of behavior. You know, we still have it. And so I just don't understand why we can't change our cultural and social practices to be more inclusive of anyone, no matter how they identify.
Well, and I think that one of the things that bothers me so much is that our legal system supports, of course, it was designed and created to support that status quo when women were possessions. And
right.
One of the things that I see right now that's really causing a lot of domestic dispute and a lot of domestic violence is that the courts seem to operate under three theories. We already talked about two of them, that a man has a right to his children and that if he's hurting his mother or the children's mother, it doesn't mean that he's going to hurt the children, which is just crazy to me. I mean, if you're hurting the mother, of course the children are going to be hurt. But the third thing is that men don't lie about it and women do.
Oh.
There's still that suspicion about women not being truthful.
Yes, yes. And that is because of the lower status of being a piece of property.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of seen as an inanimate object without an opinion or a voice.
Yeah. And if I can step in here, I just want to remind our callers, we've had some activity on our chat line, and you can contact us under our website, and you can join our chat. You can also phone us at 646-378-0430, and we'd love to have you join in this conversation. Pinkley, you back with us?
I am back with you. Thank you.
Good.
The one thing that I also want to just touch on and highlight is when we think of children and caught in the crossfires of domestic violence, it's also those that witness, and I'll be right back. So maybe Heather and Deb, you can talk a little bit about the witnessing of violence.
Well, I think that goes back to the whole notion of how damaging domestic violence is. If it
right.
happens to women, if it happens to children, it's minimized. If two men are walking down the street and one hits the other one, then that's a huge, big deal, and the courts get all upset about it. Why is it different? Is it all this cultural thing? Is it all just centuries of conditioning that we have this expectation that it's different if it's women or children? Deborah?
Yeah, and I think that even though that domestic violence is a very interpersonal form of violence, that because it has far-reaching effects, right, it's a ripple effect, as we're trying to explain here, it not only happens as perpetrator to victim, but also anybody close to perpetrator or victim is impacted. And there's been some psychological studies, I believe, Heather, that prove that if just observing an act of violence is the same as having it happen to yourself, specifically when it's someone you love or is close to you.
I think that's true. And that, again, we go back to those whole causes. So people who seem to think that domestic violence is caused by anger or caused by alcohol, drugs, or mental health problems, they're looking for a surface. They're looking at the surface behavior.
Yes.
And not really understanding that this is much, much deeper than
exactly.
just surface behavior, that this is a real cultural thing. And that we're still supporting it. I think a lot of people think that, well, we're all past that. We all know that hitting somebody is not the answer. Well, and that it's not right. Well, that's true, and I think we're all aware of that. But
right.
there's
I
also
think,
other ways, a myriad of other ways you can abuse women, and we're going to get into that next week for our listeners if you have more interest in that area. But for right now, we have that culture to deal with, Deborah.
Right. Culturally, I believe that we are encouraged to believe that war or violence is a means to resolve conflict.
Yeah.
And so then transfer that to a personal relationship. It just doesn't work. It's not the same thing. And even though it may be culturally acceptable for countries to war against each other, I personally don't support war in the many wars were fought over ownership of land and resources, and then there's also wars that are fought over ideals and religions, and those sorts of things are not, it's not acceptable to me to kill each other over those things.
Well,
maybe I'm an anomaly in our culture, but I don't
know. Is there anything that you would think a war would be worth war?
I can't think of anything.
Okay. I just wanted to do that as an aside.
What about you? Good topic.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there are some things. I agree with you that property isn't necessarily a good idea to fight over, but I do think that ideologies sometimes, if someone is not in order to spread your ideology, but if your ideology is being threatened by someone outside, then I think that that's legitimate to fight over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
okay. I can accept that, and that doesn't mean that I don't support our troops, by the way, because I absolutely do. I have great respect for anybody in the military and performing that service for their country and their families.
Yeah.
I totally support our military wherever they're at. I'm just saying, as a cultural paradigm shift, I'd like to see that changed, where we don't have to go to war. I mean, I think it's a shame, right? Our young people are an incredible resource to all of our countries, and they're the ones we send to the front lines and have the most devastating effect on us. So I just think there is something inherently wrong about war, period.
Well, I think of two-year-olds who are fighting over a toy, and the one two-year-old just reaches over and bonks the other one and grabs the toy. To me, that's war.
It is war.
And in order to mature beyond that, I think is a real cultural influences play a real large part there. And that brings me back to the whole thing about the causes of domestic violence. It sounds to me like in our conversation today, Deborah, we've been talking about a lot of cultural reasons for domestic violence. Pinkley brought up that whole issue of control. And in a culture where men are supposed to have control and acknowledge that they have control, domestic violence can be a little higher.
Right.
In our country, we pay lip service to the fact that men and women should be equal. But in fact, a lot of us don't live that way.
Yeah. What were some of those statistics you were mentioning before our broadcast?
Oh, do you have those?
Let me see. I think they're on this other page here.
Right here. Canada has 29%, Japan 59%, United Kingdom 25%, 38% in Korea, 35% in Egypt, 42% in Kenya. So, you know, we've got some really high percentages.
And I know that we as a nation here in the United States, when anything impacts us medically at about anything over like 10%. We do all kinds of preventive measures and campaign awareness, you know, ideas and practices. And so, you know, all these percentages that you mentioned are at least that or higher, but yet we still have trouble getting engagement from all members of society about how we shouldn't have domestic violence or rape or child abuse or all those forms of violence.
So we're kind of saying, no, we shouldn't have this behavior without really making it clear what the underlying causes of this behavior are.
Right.
And if you don't understand the causes, how can you change the behavior?
Exactly. And whose behavior does need changing? Is it the perpetrator of that, or is it the victim of that? And I think as a society, we tend to focus on the survivor or the victim of a crime and say, well, you could have done this, or maybe next time you'll do that, or you can change your housing and you can give up everything you have in order to be safe, rather than focusing on the perpetrator or the offender whose behavior does need to be modified.
Yes. And I think it's just like, you know, 40 years ago, if a woman was raped, first of all, she wasn't believed. And secondly of all, if she was believed, it was, why were you dressed like that? What were you doing in that section of town?
Yeah.
So
or why were you
blame
by yourself?
On her reactions and her behavior, rather than saying, you know, the perpetrator did this. And I think we see the same thing even now with domestic violence, where someone is abused and friends, neighbor, family, sometimes churches will say, well, you need to do this, this, and this. You need to do this, this, and this. And nobody's really concentrating on what he needs to do.
Exactly. You know, when I speak to church groups and service groups, I like to bring that aspect of that. You know, you really need to talk to the person who's breaking the marriage contract or who's causing the harm, and that means you need to talk to the perpetrator or the offender, and that person is in your church community. What are you doing to help them be held accountable and recognize their behavior is not acceptable, and what can you do to help them learn new and different behaviors? And I think that's a really positive thing that our, you know, culture could be working on as well. Without, I wouldn't want any of our, you know, interventions or our crisis models to be stopped or not, you know, but I certainly think that there are other things we can be looking at as a way to, you know, eliminate or prevent violence in the home.
So this week we've kind of covered a lot of reasons, underlying reasons and entrenched reasons that domestic violence occur. And it sounds to me, just to kind of sum up, it's cultural because it has been allowed and acceptable for so many centuries. And it's also, the men get kind of a free pass on it. They really do. It's kind of like you have to do something really egregious as a man in domestic violence to not have a large number of people saying, well, what did she do to set you off? Or, well, he's been under a lot of pressure at work. Or he's been, you know, he was drinking. So we make all these excuses for the perpetrator, and our culture kind of leads us to that. So I think we can sum it all up, Deborah, if you agree, in that it is a cultural, legal, and economic problem.
Absolutely, and it's not just focused in one home or between two people, that it's the responsibility of everybody to work to change this and make it better.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to just say, this is Pinkley, and sorry I had to step away for a minute, but my mantra has always been, it takes a community. It really takes a community to step up and end violence in our homes.
Yep, and I think we'd all three agree on that, don't you, Deborah?
I do, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no better way to sum it up that it takes all of us, and that's why we work so well together with our diverse experiences and our diverse lives.
And our different views on war.
I want to thank our listeners, and I want to thank you two for being my coworkers. And I'm proud to say that we are three women.
Three three ways.
Three divas.
All right.
Please join us next week.
All right. Bye-bye.